We'll start the meeting tonight with the opening prayer led by Pastor Bill Moll, Owasso Free Methodist Church. Pastor.
Well, let us pray. Father, thank you that we can be gathered here for such an occasion in which we thank you for the city we live in. We thank you for those who help lead it. We thank you for all of the blessings that we see everywhere we turn. Lord, there are many problems and many challenges always ahead of us. And as this council and these leaders talk tonight, as people express their views tonight, I pray that you'd bring us together, because it's so easy for us to point fingers at others. It's so easy for us to think we have all the answers, and the truth is, we don't. We seek your wisdom. We seek your help tonight, as you've helped so many times. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Pastor. This brings us to the Pledge of Allegiance, which will be led by Justin Horvath. Justin.
Thank you, Mayor Robin Council. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Be seated. This brings us to the roll call. Madam Clerk, when you are ready.
Okay. Mayor Tice.
Here.
Pro Tem Osika.
Here.
Council members Fear.
Here.
Haber.
Here.
Law.
Here.
Olson.
Here.
And Fidek.
Here.
Thank you. This now brings us to the approval of the agenda.
I will make a motion to approve the agenda. Support.
I have a motion.
Are we moving? No. I was going to ask that.
Yes.
Do we want to move business item?
Blake Grant.
Okay. Yeah, I'll ask that item number 2 be removed. I'd like to postpone that to our April 1st meeting.
Amend my motion to take out item business number 2, Blake Grant Agreement.
Support.
I have a motion support. With this change, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the same. The agenda is approved. This brings us to the approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of March 4th, 2024.
I will make a motion to approve the minutes of the regular meeting of March 4th, 2024.
Support.
I have a motion to support. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the same. The minutes of the regular meeting of March the 4th, 2024 are approved. This brings us to proclamations and special presentations, in which we have none. This then brings us to public hearings, which also we have none. This brings us now to our first citizen comments and questions, in which you shall be afforded one opportunity of up to 4 minutes duration during the first occasion, and up to 3 minutes duration during the last occasion. Is there anyone that would like to address the council at this time? Yes. Please state your name and address.
Hi, I'm Kim White, director of the Shiawassee District Library. I don't live here, but I am here on behalf of the library. And the reason I'm here today is to just let everyone know, if you don't already, that the library has cooperated on a project with all of the libraries in Shiawassee County called One Book Shiawassee, and the book that we have chosen to all read together is called Firekeeper's Daughter. And the really great thing about this project, other than that it's something that we all want to do in cooperation with one another, to come together to talk about one book and all the subjects there within, is that we are all hoping to come together to hear the author speak about this book. And that is going to be a free event that's open to the public right here in Owasso at the Lebowski Center on Saturday, April 13th at 1 p.m. And we do have a bunch of copies of this book, Firekeeper's Daughter, floating around the community. They're called traveling books, and they've got a sticker in the front. These were acquired through a grant from the state of Michigan through the Arts and Humanities Council, and they're made available to share with the public free of charge. You don't have to check them out from the libraries. There are probably about 90 to 100 copies of these floating around the county, and some of you probably have already had your hands on one. There are also lots of copies available to check out from all the libraries in the county or to download from our digital services. And our goal is to just have as many people as possible coming together over one subject, and that's this book. So please, take a moment, visit our website, visit your home library website if you're not from the city of Owosso, and take a look, check out the book, and come and hear the author speak about it. Saturday, April 13th, 1 p.m., Lebowski Center, free. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Mr. Ranke.
Tom Ranke, 2910 West M21. About that book, it's a great book. I was asked if I would market it for the book month when it came out. I said not until I read it. So it took me a couple weeks to read, but it is an exceptional good book that you'd want to have on your in your bookcase. So you can buy them off of Amazon. It's well worth buying, and it's a great book to read. I won't go into it exactly what it's all about, but you know, we have meth here, we have meth all over Michigan, and this happens to be meth up on the Indian Reservation. And so it's a good book. Couple things. I've gotten a lot of people are asking this question. Why did you go with an out-of-town realtor? People aren't happy about that. Our community do not understand why you would screw over our realtors here and go out of town. Now, if it's about money, what you need to know, and I think Mr. Henney can tell you, the city of Owosso has a program. If you're a business inside the city, you get paid more. So someone outside the city can give, say, it's we're going to do it for 8, 9, 10% less. City has a program. Always has had. Now, if all of a sudden it's changed from the third floor, it's brand new. But if you're an Owosso business, you got privilege up to 10% more. Now, the third thing I'll tell you what. I'm going to let other people speak because I bet you somebody wants to speak about the new zoning. So I'll let them speak. I'll talk to you last.
Thank you, Mr. Mankey. Yes, Justin.
Evening, Council. Justin Horvath, 818 South Washington Street. Glad to be back in front of you. Wearing a couple hats tonight. Number one, here is the Shiawassee Economic Development President CEO in support of an item on your consent agenda, Perry DiClemente and his project for the Magoo's building. I know that's not going to be for discussion tonight. It'll be April, and I'll be back in April to speak in support as well. But we've had the opportunity to work with Perry and Sarah and Lion Bear to help them get this project off the ground. Actually pointed them in the direction of Lion Bear to help get grant funding to be able to repair the upper floor into some really high quality apartments. I think it's going to be a wonderful project for downtown. So you'll have an item on your agenda, a public hearing in April to cover that. The other hat I'm wearing tonight is actually representing the Shiawassee County Land Bank. SEDP is the staffing support for the County Land Bank. And you have on your consent agenda as well the scheduling of a public hearing in April for a brownfield plan for two land bank development properties that we're very excited about. And I do want to thank Manager Henney, Attorney Gould. We've been working very hard. We've got the land bank board. Greg Brodeur is represented here tonight as well. A lot of partners working collaboratively to bring two new housing developments online in the city of Owosso that'll represent 30 new dwelling units in the area. So really excited. One property is the Woodland Trails property, which is the condo development by the high school. We have a builder for that. That's Morgan Construction out of Swartz Creek. They will be here at your council meeting in April. As well as Venture Housing. You've heard from Venture before. They have the purchase agreement currently in the middle school to redevelop that. They are the same developer for the property we're working on called Washington Park, which has come in front of this council previously under another iteration. So really exciting. There's a lot of benefits to the project. I won't share any more tonight. However, if any of the council members would like to ask questions, would like to talk to me on behalf of the Land Bank or Greg, or would like to talk to the builders and developers as you prepare for your council meeting, please let me know. Just want to make that offer available. But really exciting project, two exciting projects coming forward for your public hearings in April. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments?
Jane Ferraro, 302 West Oliver Street. So today I'm asking you to vote against revising the zoning ordinances that are related to changes in our residential districts, not against all of the zoning changes. I believe these changes are too drastic and unnecessary, and they go against the city's master plan, which are clearly stated in goal 1.22, amend zoning standards to reduce the conversion of single-family homes to multi-unit apartments and minimize their impacts. Rather than trying to make higher density exceptions the rule in every neighborhood, I respectfully suggest that the city consider carving out a new, more precise zoning district made up of our corridors, which is in keeping with the master plan, goal 1.24, plan for attached single-family and multifamily along corridors, which are M21, M40-71, and M52, and as transitional uses between neighborhoods and commercial or employment areas. This allows housing growth where it belongs and keeps family neighborhoods free from overly broad changes to code. I would also like to emphasize that while streamlining zoning codes is part of becoming a redevelopment-ready community, streamlining can be detrimental if overdone. I don't believe the state expects one-size-fits-all zoning solutions. And if you look at other certified communities, such as Lanesburg, Grand Blanc, or Howell, their residential single and two-family neighborhoods are left intact. Other communities have not found it necessary or even wise to mess around with their R1 and R2 zoning, and we should not either. I do respect that you have tried very hard on the planning committee to come up with design plans that represent neighborhood, kind of beautification or, you know, the way that they look now, and that's nice. Janae, thank you for responding to my email. That's much appreciated, but there is a difference. It's not a small change from 8-foot side lot to 5-foot. That's 16 feet between houses to 10 feet between houses. That's like spitting distance. That's a 50% change. I don't know if anybody has lived that close between houses. I came from a place where that was the case. I know a lot of my neighbors moved to Owosso to get away from that kind of dense housing. That's what makes Owosso a pleasant place to live in. That's one of the reasons that it is a nice place to live in. And Bridge, Michigan, actually on March 15th, published where communities in Michigan are growing. In Owosso, or Shiawassee County grew just a teeny weeny bit. Washtenaw County lost a couple of thousand people. I mean, even Keweenaw County grew a little bit. People are moving out away into smaller places. They don't want to be cheek and jowl to neighbors. So please consider that. And in closing, please concentrate on reviving the city downtown and the economic and mixed-use corridors that already exist and that draw visitors to Owosso. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Seeing none, We'll bring it back to council. I'm recommending that any comments regarding zoning will be held until we go to business item number one, and we'll discuss any questions at that time. I did ask the Tanya, our planning and building director, who's also playing our clerk tonight, to be here to help answer any questions that the council might have during business item number one. If you have any other comments, we're open.
I just have a comment. This past Friday, they had the Shamrock Shuffle downtown. We had many volunteers who made a great success. I was down there, and there was a lot of families. Everybody was having fun. I did talk to a few of the stores, the retail stores, and they did very well that night. So it was a great event, and I thank all the volunteers who helped make it happen.
So talking about the Shamrock Shuffle, I've been assigned something from the Main Street to announce about the Owosso Chocolate Walk. Okay, right now we have 20 businesses signed up for this, for the walk, which will have treats and so forth available at each one of those. It's going to be April the 20th, 1 to 4. Basically, the check-in center will be Gilbert's Hardware from 1 to 3. I will be at the check-in at Gilbert's, so I'll hopefully be seeing many of you participating. Basically, first of all, the tickets will be $10, but the ticket purchases support Owosso Main Street's mission of preserving our community's history and charm. And it's also going to be for the refurbishment of the fountain in downtown. So that's where the money is going to be going. With that, any further comments? Okay, well, that will bring us then to the consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve consent agenda. Support.
I have a motion support. This would be a roll call vote. Madam Clerk, when you're ready.
Council members Haber?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
Fear?
Yes.
Hydeck?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Osika?
Yes.
Council member Law?
Yes.
And Mayor Teich?
Yes, the consent agenda is approved. This will bring us to our first item of business, number one, ordinance amendment, zoning ordinance rewrite. And we will start off with the city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's been 2 weeks since council has asked for the slight delay to consider comments from the public hearing 2 weeks ago. I appreciate those of you who reached out to Tanya and I, and to you, Mr. Mayor. We went over the zoning code draft pretty thoroughly today after a lot of research, and I think that council, the seven of you, are prepared to discuss any concerns that your constituents have or any concerns or questions that you had but have since been answered. So it's a little fortuitous that Tanya Buckley was here with us this evening to fill in for Amy Kirkland, because like you pointed out, Mr. Mayor, she's been involved in this since the beginning, mm-hmm. 4 years ago. So a lot of work has gone into this draft by the Planning Commission. CIB Planning has been our planning consultant for quite some time now. We hired them on when we were interested in going into the Redevelopment Ready Community certification process. They are certified by the state not only for that, but for their efforts in the zoning and planning world. So I have a lot of faith in CIB, who has brought us to this point. So I've had discussions with all of you since the last meeting, and I think you are prepared to have that discussion this evening. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can move this forward in whatever fashion you deem appropriate.
Sure.
And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So I've had a couple of weeks to do my own research into this zoning.
And I have to say that I've learned a lot in 2 weeks. I thought when this was amended to 2024 zoning that we were updating 2012. Well, actually, the last ordinance that we approved was 1977. So, a lot older than I thought. And what the city has been dealing with since 1977 is a lot of addendums. Addendum upon addendum upon addendum upon addendum. So I asked our director, Tanya, basically we've had many meetings. I said, page 40. This is page 40 that I was very interested in, about for example, a quad. In the new zoning, it says you need, basically for a quad, if you have four units, everyone has one bedroom, you basically need 1,000 square feet per unit. That means the house has got to be about 4,000 square feet. If it's R2, you need 18,000 square feet of land. If it's R1, you need 12,000 square foot of land. That means just roughly R2, you need about 150 front foot by about 120 feet depth. For R1, you need about 100 by 120 depth. This is just an example. There's many, many examples. I'm just using this one. So I think, well, okay. Now we talk about how many lots we have like that in town. Not only that, basically, how many houses do we have that has that in town that you can convert into a quad? Then I ask, how many have we done in the last 7 years that Tanya has been in her position? Zero. And then I asked, the 1977 ordinance that's been basically, with all these addendums, has this been possible with the old ordinance in 1977, the current one that we have right now? The answer is yes. The only difference is with the new one, we're trying to make it more streamlined, that anything that's under 2,000 square foot, the city administrates it. Anything over 2,000 square foot, it goes back to Planning Commission. Now remember, a quad, you need 4,000 square feet if you have one bedroom per each unit. So a quad, typically a tri, even if you can find a house that conforms, probably won't comply. So I asked Tanya, I said, well, let's talk about parking. This is a big issue, is the parking. Most of our R1, R2, especially Oliver Street and that surrounding area, have 33, 40-foot lots. I said, Tanya, if somebody came to you and wanted to make a triplex, what's the procedure? Well, they'd give Tanya a plan. And the first thing that Tanya would ask is, do you meet the parking requirements? Now, with a quad with one bedroom, and each one of the quads, four bedrooms, requires 2.5 parking spaces per unit. That's 10 parking spaces. And you can't really park in front of the house. You can't make parking there. So it's going to eliminate most all of the properties that we have. Now, the 5-foot and the 20-foot, the 5-foot and the 10-foot, two issues there that I see. And Tanya, you can, Director, you can, if I'm saying something wrong, stop me at any time. There's two issues with the 5 and 10. The 5 and 10 we have, and I got with the city manager and the director regarding this. There's a question 2 weeks ago. The answer is basically our total housing is 6,400 units in this town. Of that, 260 units are multiple, consisting of 2 to 11 units, or 4.4% of our housing. That's what we have. So we are not, we're basically, if I'm saying this right, city manager, low density. 4.4% is pretty, not a big percent of multiples, correct?
The master plan does, it doesn't point out specifically that 4.4% is our ratio of multifamily units, small multifamily units, in this case from 2 to 11, because that's what we can pull from the assessing database. It doesn't specifically say this is how many you have and this is the percentage. Mm-hmm. It says it is clear that Owosso is very dependent on single-family homes where the lots are larger than what we usually see. Mm-hmm. That's the situation there. It doesn't get into specifics, but mm-hmm. you're on the right track.
Okay. So the 5 to 10, there's a lot of concern about the 5 to 10. The 5 to 10 is existing. These homes are already existing. They're not conforming. We want to make them to conform with this so it's easier for the owners to get loans to improve these properties. When it comes to 5 and 10 on infill, that means infill building new properties, that you actually have a lot that you can build a unit of a fourplex and so forth. Very doubtful that's going to be 5 feet to the line. Why? Because of parking. So this 5 to 10 is nothing to do with infill. When you think about parking, it's just not going to work. It's really meant for existing units, houses that have been out there and converted for the last 40, 50, 60, 70 years before we had zoning for that situation. So that's what that's about. There was a question that came up during this last 2 weeks. Well, what about if someone buys 4 or 5 houses, tears them down, and puts a 4-unit up? How's that going to look to our city when we do that? And it's going to be, can it be 10 feet to the road and everything, all the other houses, let's say, are 50 feet back from the road? How's that work? Director, you want to answer that for me?
I apologize. I was kind of like writing at the same time.
I mean, I can answer it, but you want to answer that?
You go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm trying to converse with you better in my shorthand.
Also in the zoning, and remember, the zoning's not a bad thing. The zoning actually protects the city. It gives us rules. It gives us guidelines. Basically, if you have, let's say, a row of homes, and they're all 50 feet back from the road, and you have someone buy 3 or 4 houses, tear them down, and they're going to put a unit up. Two things. Number one, we put something new in the ordinance called 38.54, Residential Development Regulations. So what is that? This is new. It was not in the 1977 or any of the addendums. So if someone does build something that's in a historical district or any district, it says the development regulations contained herein are intended to regulate the character of the new infill housing development within 300 feet defined area of the city which contained traditional and historic exterior design elements. The purpose of these regulations is to promote harmony in the neighborhoods between new housing units and the existing buildings. By assuring that the new construction is of suitable character in terms of site layout, building dimensions, architectural design, and building materials. That's new. Okay. The other thing is, as I haven't answered, is that now can that building be 10 feet, and all the others are 50 feet?
No, it's meant to keep it in line with the neighborhood.
So that's not going to happen. It's in the zoning, correct?
Correct.
So these things are all spread out, but what's really nice about this is if you ever go to the 1977 ordinance that you deal with every day and you try to find something, you can't navigate. You're looking for it here and there. It's just spoiled all over the place. This is like a book. Index, definitions. It's organized. Okay, and many, many years, 4 years just to develop this, but many, many years before that, that they took from the old one and made the new one. Again, what I gather that, and I get the feel that we came up with this new one, and all of a sudden we just are going to start putting quads, tries, duplexes up. It makes it easy. No, it's not easy. Most of the housing we have here aren't going to qualify for it. It's been in the zoning already. The only difference is 2000 and less, the city administrates it. It gets it away from planning. Remember, the Planning Commission is nine of us. It's nine of us, not city. Nine of us. We have a liaison, which is the planner, which is the director. Then we have the planner, CIB, at those meetings. So,
little Bob Seger.
Oh, what a lovely way to get a phone call, though.
So, anyway. I think I lost my concentration.
The smooth jazz. The facts.
So it's basically, I asked the question, okay, it goes to the Planning Commission. The director's there. That deals with 2,000 and less to begin with. So she's there. She's the liaison. The CIB, Justin Sprague, who was here 2 weeks ago, is there. And the nine are there. And what they're really looking at for fourplexes and less, okay, they're looking at the zoning just like we do, like the 2,000 less, like Tanya would on 2,000 less units. They're just looking at it. You just have more people looking at it. And if they meet the zoning, all the zoning, it's going to be approved. Just like if something comes to Tanya on a 2,000 and less unit, if it meets parking, if it meets all the zoning, and let me tell you, there's a ton that you have to get approved, and then a ton that then when you start doing your construction, we all know that there's you have to basically be in line with all the zoning when they're doing the construction and everything else. So that's kind of it in a nutshell that what I've learned. This is nothing that we just came up with. It's been there. It's just that the one thing is the people that were concerned about the 5 feet and the 10 feet, well, that's the two options, that's the two things. Really infill, it's not going to play. And the other houses are already there. They're not going to do anything about that, and they're already 5 feet. So that was the thing. The other thing was, it all should go to the Planning Commission, every one of them. Well, 2,000 and less, I think it's, I believe, I really believe, I sit in that office almost every day when I'm not traveling. I see how the city works. I see the talent of these people. I have full faith that 2,000 and less, we can administrate it, and we can get this, these things through quicker for the owners and developers to get the job done. And that's why that was done. So that's me in a nutshell. And I'll leave it to anybody else that wants to ask Tanya or anybody else any questions on the council at this point in time. And if there are, I have it. And after that, I'd be looking for any type of motion anybody would like to make.
I'm curious about the side setbacks and how we came up with the 5 feet, only because I've done some comparison. And, like, even in San Francisco where my sister lives, it's 6 feet. So that's really dense housing. I'm wondering why we came to the 5 feet. Like, why eight? I know it's like a crazy question because it's like why, but how did that become a justified decision to go down from 8 to 5? And what's the gain?
What do our planning commissioners have to say on that? Did you guys get yourselves updated?
Go ahead.
I mean, I just wanted to know. I mean, we have a planning commission.
Correct.
And did you talk to anybody in the planning commission?
Talked to Janae. She had no reference of it. Dan said he had no reference of it last week or 2 weeks ago. So
right, less 2 weeks ago, but you wanted 2 weeks to get up.
Yeah. Well, the answer is very simple. There's a lot of lots out there that are 33 feet. There's a lot of existing homes that are. That's why we did it. Like I said, there's two issues here. There's a lot of existing properties that have that 5 foot. There's a lot of 33 foot lots out there that our houses are on. I owned one of them. I lived in one of them for 13 years. I had a common drive of 9 feet. And in that common drive, on my neighbor's side, they had a chimney that stuck out another foot and a half. And then the ice come down between when you have a big snow, and you got about 8 foot, you got ice, and you're trying to drive your car all the way from the backyard all the way through it without hitting either one of the houses. That's a 33-foot lot with a common drive. And there's a lot of them out there. And there's some of them that have rentals. So again, this is already houses that have been built many, many decades ago that we're just trying to bring into compliance so they can get loans to improve their housing easier, because banks are pretty strict about those kind of things. It's the infill, it's the new housing that you're concerned about. If you had a 100-foot lot, and you had a house here and a house here, are you going to go 5 foot, 5 foot from the 100-foot house and still have the ability to have the required parking? No.
Right.
So it's really for existing.
Right. I didn't know if there was a... It sounds like there was a motivation to change it.
There was.
For to the 5 feet. That's all that I was... It made it seem like this is just bundled in other changes without rhyme or reason being presented. So that's why I was asking.
Not that I... that's not what I've been told.
Perfect.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I will make a motion to...
I'm sorry. I do have
my question. Are you I'm sorry.
Nope. Exactly. So on last week, or 2 weeks ago on Justin's thing, he mentioned that by changing to the R1, R2, and removing the RM and whatever, that it removes the non-conforming status and eases the administrative burden of enforcement. So my curiosity was what was being done to enforce the non-compliance that we're removing the burden of, and what will that look like? So how do we enforce? So nothing.
Well, until they're non-conforming, they're non-conforming. I mean, you can't go back and change anything. Reducing the setbacks helps them a little bit in their process, and like they talked about in refinancing or anything like that, but
there isn't actually an administrative burden. There wasn't actually an administrative burden that was being fit that these homes were causing, or these additional residential zones were causing.
I have not read that letter, but I'm not experiencing any administrative burden. And so there was something else that he was referencing. I'm unsure of what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just part of his. It seems like it was part of the describing the motivation for why this would be good to reduce the number of residential zones.
Oh, you mean to
yeah.
To reduce the number of, yeah, we don't need as so many residential districts. We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
And we're down to 3. We did not need 4 because if you read the old zoning ordinance, you have an R1 and this is allowed. You go to R2, well then you go back to R1 because that's allowed in 2. And then it goes to 3 and then you go back to 1 and 2 and then you go to 4 and it just keeps accelerating.
Adding on to itself?
Yes, and that's probably what he's talking about as far as the administrative burden, trying to have 6 different districts and what each one would require. That would probably,
yeah.
That's what he's referring to. And it was too much because we didn't, it was.
Excessive.
It's excessive, correct.
Yeah.
And downsizing that to just the 3 districts
makes
it, administratively, yes, it's much less of a burden for us.
I had just 2 more things. One is a statement, because last time I brought up my concern, and I asked everybody if they knew whether there was a greater burden on home buyers that would be qualifying for mortgages under conventional loans once we hit that 4-plex. Maybe you don't remember, but I did bring it up. I was asking, like, if that's something that would carry forward once it became a 4-plex to being able to turn it back into a single family or something like that. And I talked to somebody in mortgage today, and they confirmed that, nope, as of a couple years ago, it went down from a 15% down payment for a 1-to-4 down to 5%. So in the recent years, it's actually become much easier for people to get financing, even if it's a multi-unit. So that made me feel better for future homeowners trying to buy into our neighborhoods. And then my other question, and probably the most important question, is what can we do if this yields a negative outcome? Is there a way to put the genie back in the bottle? Can Planning Commission offer an amendment on a large scale if this proves to be detrimental to our neighborhoods? Can we walk it backwards?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. This is a... Even though it's adopted as per se set in stone, it's a working book.
Right.
This is new to me, even after working on the old one, working with this one. I fear someday we're going to turn a page and go, oh, well, hi there. Where did this come from? We're going to offer amendment on this. But yes, most definitely, if I find administratively that we are running into burdens and variances or various things that are affecting.
Oh, my gosh.
We just got a little concert going on tonight. I would be the first one to be going to Planning Commission with Justin and going, okay, let's rewrite this. And, yes, council would see a revision.
Yeah.
And we would go through the process again. I mean, we would not do a complete rewrite of this book by no means. I don't ever want to go through that again.
Oh, my gosh. This is dense reading.
It is.
Yeah.
But most definitely, if we find anything is not working, then by all means.
There's a path forward to
revising it. It's an ordinance amendment in front of Planning Commission, public hearing, probably, 90 days process for it to go through.
Not 50 years.
No. No.
That makes me feel better because, you know, I think that sometimes you don't know how something's going to play out until it plays out. And so living in the land of hypothetical or, like I was saying, like looking around, it's hard because every time I have one of these phone calls, I'm at my house and I'm looking around and I'm like, oh, what's 3 feet? Like you can only see what you can see. And it's really hard to try to make yourself imagine all the worst case scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier just to live them and then know that we have a path for rectifying them if it turns out that it's really blown up in our faces,
yes.
I think. Because I think that you guys have done amazing work. Obviously, I think this is an intense project that you guys did because reading it was intense. It was like a lot of dozing off. very dry. So good job, everybody, for your hard effort.
I can attest to the amendments because we've redone the sign ordinance like 4 times since I've been here. So,
right.
Because issues come up with it, you know, once you have something come up a couple times and you're like, okay, we need to revisit this, talk about it, maybe rework it. I wasn't aware until you were just speaking. So a home can be considered non-conforming if the side setbacks are off and that could impact funding. The mortgage companies check that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I thought when we were talking about non-conforming, it was more the multifamily and what looks to be a single family. that type of thing. I did have a question about the 260 number. Where did that data come from? Was that people who have, landlords who have filed for rental licenses, or their multi-utility hookups, or what?
It comes from our BSNA assessing module. BSNA is the software package that basically runs the entire city. So I went to the, because I know that that question came up 2 weeks ago, and Justin nor staff had an answer for that. So I went to Mike and I said, hey, can you run a report that shows us how many multi-unit, how multi-unit structures, small multi-unit structures exist in the city of Owosso? I already knew that we had 6,400 households. I just wanted to know what the ratio was. So about 15 minutes later, he comes into my office and it's 268. So that's how we got that.
Other questions?
Nick does.
What happens to, I know part of the answer, but I think it'd be good just to hear, you know, from the staff, but what happens for houses that are maybe not registered? How do they get brought up to compliance? What does that process look like if they're, I mean, obviously you can't control things that people are hiding and like the illegal stuff, but I'm talking about when they want to go through this process, what typically happens. Let's say, you know, we had some comments about, you know, I've got this neighbor, they have this, you know, are they even in compliance? What does that process look like for group, I don't want to say grandfathered in, but like existing houses that now we apply this, let's say we pass this, we apply the rules. What process do they have to go through for compliance for rentals? What does that look like if they have like a duplex or a triplex already in place?
Already in place, we call it, you know, the old term grandfathered in. We do our rental, you know, if they register as a rental, we do rental inspections. We find any code violations, then we would have them correct them. We can't make them bring them right up to code. The only way we can make a house come up to code is if they decide to renovate more than 50% of it, then the interior has to be completely brought up to code. Firewalls in between your units. That's obviously something that most likely has not happened in the past with all the duplexes, tries, and quads that we have. Are they up to code? Probably not. They probably don't have the firewalls in between the units, but we can't make them come up to code unless they decided to remodel.
Unless they decided to remodel, or if something happened to the home which destroyed more than 50% of its value.
Yes.
Oh, 50% of that.
Yeah, 50% is that magic number when it comes to bringing something existing up to code.
Okay. I think that's great because, I mean, we had some conversations about commercial properties and, you know, enforcing regulation that we get to go inside these homes, go inside the commercial properties to assess, you know, the fire code. And, you know, I shared my opinion that I'm against that because there are certain already regulations. I mean, Mayor Teich, what you pointed out is, like, it's not just a one rule. There's, like, multiple, like, regulations pushing on each other to create what's hopefully a well-balanced, you know, regulation code. Regulatory code, but the same thing is true. You know, it wasn't a trick question because I have a rental, and anytime you go to do something, when you do it by code, you go and go to the building department and you apply for the application, and then they come in and they look at it for the rental inspection. But the same thing is true for the commercial properties. My point of bringing that up was the argument was we don't need another code because there's already these things that happen anytime you want to do something to a building. So, you know, for those citizens or just even council members who are questioning, like, hey, how do these things get to compliance? If you don't think something is registered, then send a note, say, hey, I think is this even on the registration? Because we do have this system set up for rental inspections every 5 years that run that gamut. If they want to do a building change or they need to repair something, like there's already a system already in place right now. It's not even necessarily in this adoption proposal that caused checks and balances to be there. So just I know those are some comments last council meeting about what do we do, how do we look at those. So I think it's just worth noting that here too to bring these things up to compliance. Anytime somebody wants to do something, if it were to be for a sale, You know, I know when I bought a house, you know, it was asked to me, like, is this a rental or are you living in it? You know, those are the questions, I think, that start to trigger these things with transfer of ownership as well. So at least the stuff that people want to do by the book or on the level. So I think you can't necessarily enforce the stuff that people hide from us. So that's a lot harder.
Sure. Other comments?
I just want to thank you for your clear explanation. I really did come in with my own reservations, and I feel like you kind of explained it thoroughly enough to make me realize that this applies to very few properties actually within our community, and it kind of alleviated some of my worry about the doomsday kind of predictions of, you know, because you don't want to, I really don't. I love Owosso's housing. I think it's the greatest thing, and it's a real feather in our cap. I say it over and over again, but it's like, I would hate to see that deteriorated, so of course you want to protect it and safeguard it, but seeing, like Nick's saying, how many ways in which it's restricted all by itself throughout the other zoning things makes me feel more confident that the street's not going to immediately turn over to, you know, three, four different fourplexes. So my house might, but just kidding. I'm like, I meet the criteria with all those crazy kids. Yeah, but so thank you, Rob. I appreciate your... Well,
thank you. Yeah, kind of, if you can believe it, I care about the town myself.
Of course. I don't doubt it, but I do think that, you know, sometimes it's a new, you know, it's nice.
I'd be looking for any motion.
I have a motion to approve the ordinance amendment, zoning ordinance rewrite.
Support.
I have a motion of support. This would be a roll call vote.
Mr. Mayor. Mayor Pro Tem, if you don't mind amending your ordinance to, just to keep things simple, add to page 37 all historic districts listed in the National Park Service database of National Historic Districts. We need to add those back in. They are Oliver Mason, Westtown, Michigan Avenue.
All right, so I'm going to make that motion to approve the ordinance amendment, zoning ordinance rewrite, with adding the historic districts Oliver, Mason, Westtown, Michigan Avenue.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
And I still support it.
That would be a roll call vote.
Okay. And we have Council Members Pydeck.
Yes.
Haber.
Yes.
Law.
Yes.
Fear.
Yes.
Olson.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Osika?
Yes.
And Mayor Teich?
Yes, the ordinance amendment, zoning ordinance rewrite is approved. This brings us to our second citizen comments and questions, in which you'll have 3 minutes to address the council. Is there anybody at this time that would like to address the council? Mr. Winke.
A couple things. Honestly, the new zoning, and I'll apologize, I have not read it, and so I'm not sure about the minimum size of homes. I don't know whether this has been addressed, because homes are starting to get smaller. Just like after World War II, if you get up on Hickory Street or you drive around different areas, you'll see a lot of homes that are only 20 feet deep. And they're one story, 20 feet deep, and they might be 30 feet long. They're only 700-800 feet square footage. As we see more and more people downsizing, the McMansions are, we see that outside of the cities. We see those in townships and such. But inside a city, since we've already got many homes that are only down in the 700 or 800 square feet, miniature homes per se, I was wondering if those are still going to be allowed if in a rebuild, if someone wants to build a new one, since they already exist in this town. After World War II, there was a lot of them built. It was called soldier, whatever. Second thing is on something that you've already discussed and voted on to do. I was just wondering if we're getting some commercial roofs checked downtown to make sure that they don't cave in. I know you all voted to have that done, where the code enforcement can get inside the buildings and look at the roofs. I'm just wondering if that's been done. And then the last thing is on the building on Exchange Street, voting if the money comes in to take that building out. What I'm asking is, has different things been looked at on that building? For instance, keeping the facade, just cleaning out the basement. That's an infill building, so since it's an infill, both walls on the other buildings are exterior walls. So if someone wants to build in there, all they're doing is putting a back wall and a front wall, put a roof on, and of course a floor over the basement. So, but a one-story building could go in there real quick, real simple. But it has to be cleaned out, and I think those are things important. Instead of just ripping buildings down and putting in a parking lot, we see right now how ugly it looks down on South Washington Street when that Lula's building was just, it's just dirt, sand, looks terrible. And this is something that that could be done with not spending that much money, and it would be preserving the tax base because you can just build in between. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mankey. Further comments?
Cheryl Farmer. My address is 414 Adams Street, Wausau, Michigan. I just wanted to say how disappointed I am in all of you that you, I just feel like you didn't really care much about what the homeowners wanted or thought. And I hope you all get to live next door to somebody that decides to cement their whole backyard and see what it does to your property damage. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? Seeing none, that brings us back to our next meeting, which will be April the 1st. With that, I'd be looking for a motion for... Oh, excuse me. I just wanted to make one comment to the chief. Congrats on this middle... You know, you're just... Always, you're getting more. In my world, you get more business, and it's in, and you get more business because of the job that you've been doing. And I congratulate the public service safety and getting the township's contracts. That's great news.
Thank you.
I like seeing that. With that, I'm looking for a motion for adjournment.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Support.
I have a motion to support. All those in favor.
Aye.
We are adjourned.